Foreplay. It is Waste Management Phoenix Open Week. First episode, golf podcast presented by Barstool Sports. Mm-hmm. Trent and Riggs. Trent, how you feeling?
I feel good. This is a by the common golfer, for the common golfer podcast. That's kind of the tagline. Kind of a perfect week with the Waste Management because that's, I mean, as rowdy and as common man as you can get.
It's as Trent and Riggs of an event as there is.
Totally.
Bunch of guys drinking, throwing beers. 16th hole is wild bananas, as some would say.
Would have said that we should have started like the first episode with the first big tournament of the year at Torrey Pines. No. We're going to do it Waste Management when this is the kind of tournament that our people go to.
Also very helpful that we didn't start because all we would have talked about is how Tiger was going to win and then he would have missed the cut and embarrassed us.
Yeah, it would have been a bad lesson to go back to.
Instead, it's much easier to just be like, talk a little rearview mirror situation.
We have results that we can talk about.
So shout out to us. We're very, very smart. Getting right into it, just to tell people about the podcast a little bit, we are, more than anything, gigantic fans of the game. We follow everything in the game. We love to play the game. It's not a PGA Tour podcast. It's a little bit of everything that you could possibly imagine in the world of golf podcasts. It's going to be very communal.
Yep.
We're going to be asking the listeners, the readers, to be getting involved, sending us things that we're going to talk about. Like you said, it's a little bit of a cliche with the whole Barstool thing, but it is golf podcast by the common golfer for the common golf.
People should know we went back and forth a lot about what kind of format we wanted the podcast to be. Do we want it to be strictly PGA where we just update on everything that's going on? Do we want it to be heavier on, you know, weekend hacker stuff? And I think we're going to try and do a nice blend of that, which will be a good change for a golf podcast.
We're going to mix everything together. And speaking of mixing everything together, I think people always ask, what are you guys golf games like? What do you play like? I think we should get that out there. I think we have a perfect mix where this kind of benefits us as well.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to we want to talk about all things golf, and we are kind of on opposite spectrums when it comes to golf games. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I would say you're not overly...
You can be mean to me.
You're not a great golfer.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And like, that's the thing. We're different because you are a very good golfer.
I'm not very good. Now, just so people know, we can just go, what do you think your handicap is, Trent?
I wish I knew. And I'm kind of happy I don't.
I would guess a 20, like low 20s.
That sounds right.
You move the ball out there decently.
That's very nice. You really do.
You actually get into a groove where you kind of hack it out there pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Which is not bad because we played together only time we played together was the World Long Drive.
We played in Pro-Am with our boy Jeff Flagg.
Shout out to Jeff Flagg and Golf Channel. Shout out Golf Channel for inviting us. Thackerville, Oklahoma. Go check out the video. We had a great time.
Yep.
I am by no means a phenomenal golfer.
What do you say your handicap's about at
right now? So right now my index is a 4.0. Mm-hmm. Lowest I've ever been was this last summer. I think I was like a 2.8. or something like that,
yeah.
And I haven't played much since moving to New York, so I've definitely gone up, and I'm just naturally not that good. Like, when I haven't played for very long,
yeah.
I suck. I'm terrible.
You were the type who played every day, right?
So I played a lot. When I had a junior membership at a club just outside of Boston, all my best buddies were members there. We would go up and play as often as we possibly could, especially in the summertime when the sun goes down late. You could work even until 5:36, get out to the course by 6:37, and play for 2 hours a lot of the time.
Yep.
So I played all the time. Like I said, I've gotten down pretty low, but I probably have the worst golf swing for a 3 or 4 handicap in the world.
Okay.
Very good putter.
I don't know if that's true either, because when we were at the World Long Drive, we had Michael Breed give us tips, and he was like, he's got good action over
well,
there.
Well, that might have just because he saw your swing first.
Oh, yeah, so by comparison?
Yeah, the contrast thing kind of threw him off a little bit.
That's fair.
Not 100% sure. But anyways, we're very different. We come from, I think it helps us that we're able to have guys from two totally different ends of the spectrum. I'm also like a wild, fiercely competitive freak in everything that I do. You're very just kind of laid back. You're out there hanging, taking a whack, ripping darts, your LPGA Pro-Am videos, laugh out loud, funny. So it's two guys coming at it from a very different points. Like I said, I like to play a ton of member guests and all that type of scene. So I think that benefits us.
Yeah, we'll have different perspectives, which is perfect. I think it'll be good.
Absolutely. And we're very, at the end of the day, we're here, we want people to get a laugh.
Yeah.
We want people to be entertained and interested in what we're talking about that has to do with golf. and get a laugh out of it.
Yep. We want it to be funny. We want it to be a communal thing like you talked about. We want people to get involved. It doesn't matter like how invested you are in the game of golf. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you at least obviously have some sort of interest in it. But we're going to try and cover the whole thing. It's not going to be the type of thing where we're talking about obscure statistics about how this guy is performing and all that stuff. It's going to be much more relaxed. We're going to have some statistics, but I think it's going to be a lot more let's be fans of the game of golf as opposed to being very granular.
And there's a very fine line, I feel like, or a fine line that people draw when between being kind of a golf expert, and if you're going to cover golf on a huge platform, you need to know X, Y, and Z. And you need to know stats, and you need to know numbers, and there's definitely a place for those people.
Undoubtedly.
But yeah. I would say, and it's tough coming in because you know, Barstool automatically provides a massive platform, a huge audience. And so I think we're coming at it from the other a little bit. Like, we're close. We definitely know. We pay attention. We're very in tune. We love the events. We're enthralled by them. We love the players. But we're also, at the end of the day, just huge fans.
Yep.
Just massive fans of the game. We get emotional. We're not afraid to say that we're rooting for one guy and we get excited when another guy misses a putt. We don't really give a shit. Like, we're whatever we are, we just are. We're transparent about it.
And if we're being completely honest, I think there's more of us than there are of them.
Totally agree.
Fans in terms of that way. Like,
totally
there's more
agree.
People who follow the game like we do now, especially that the game is getting younger with the kind of crop of young guys in the tour. More people are interested and they're less interested in the granular type of stuff, and I think they're more interested in like, hey, like, what's going on tour? What's up with these guys?
Yeah, I think we're going to reflect a lot more of the vibe of, you know, you get a group text with your buddies on Sunday when, you know, maybe a leader that people weren't rooting for shanks one into the water or misses a short putt or leaves one of the bunker and makes double and your buddies start texting, let's go,
yeah.
Tournament's back on, baby. That's kind of where we're coming from.
Yeah, we can say whatever we want, and that helps.
And for us, this is a really cool opportunity. Just to tease a little bit later part in the show, we had Ali Snyderjans on, who was in the mix, was tied for the lead at one point on Saturday. That's when I actually bet money on him, which I lost that money. Was in the second to last group, I believe.
No, I think he was a little further down.
Yeah. Anyways, in the mix this last weekend, had him on Monday night. So this is Wednesday morning that we're airing this. Monday night, we talked to him. We were nervous talking to him.
Yeah, and if you're like Ali Snyderjans, who is that? He's the guy who doesn't wear a hat.
Hatless guy. Great hair.
Great hair, but he's like literally the only guy on tour who doesn't wear a hat. So that's who you're picturing. And yeah, transparent. We were a little nervous interview. It was our first golf interview. So
it's awesome that we get to talk to tour guys. It's the coolest thing in the world.
That's like sneaky why we're doing this. Like, we want to get in with the tour guys a little bit. We want to be invited on the spring break trips.
We just want to be friends with them. Just like, if we have to put up this whole facade that we have this massive golf production that's going to, you know, generate some sort of revenue for a company or whatever. Whatever the fuck we got to do, we should want to be friends with the golfers.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. I totally agree.
First segment, speaking of golfers, we're calling it Player Feelings. We're gonna implement as many segments as we can. That's a very proven, successful formula. Have segments. Break your show up. Player Feelings. Trent and I each have two guys that we're going to go through and just kind of discuss how we feel about them. Pro guys.
Yeah, we think this is a good way to set the tone for the podcast and how we are going to talk about players, how we feel about certain players. It's good to have the audience know how we feel about particular guys. We're not going to do a whole list right now. We're only going to do a couple. But this is just to get a feel for how we feel about a couple of tour players.
So to start it off, Trent, how do you feel about Bubba Watson?
How do I feel about Bubba Watson? If you followed me at all on Twitter or on the blog, you probably know already I do not like Bubba Watson whatsoever. And the reason is, here's the thing. I should like Bubba Watson, and so should you. I'm pointing at Riggs, and so should the people listening, because his name's Bubba Watson. He's from the South. He's his own teacher. He's got a great swing. He hits it a mile. But he's an asshole.
You're right. On paper, he's very likable.
That's the thing. On paper, he's great. He's perfect. Everybody should like Bubba Watson, but he doesn't do it the right way. He yells at people. He yells at his caddy all the time. He bitches out gallery members. He's not very nice in the media. There was a poll ESPN took of the tour players asking if somebody got in a fight, or if tour players got in a parking lot fight, who would you least be expected to help? And Bubba Watson won the poll by like a mile.
In a landslide.
So, and he's a case of, he was awesome at first because of all the things I said before about his name, but then as he got more camera time, as he won a couple of Masters, you get exposed more and the truth, the real you comes out, and that was not a good thing for Bubba. So that's the reason why I dislike Bubba.
Bonus name, how do you feel about Ian Poulter?
pretty much the same. Bubba and Ian Poulter are the same. They're just from, I like Bubba a little bit more because he's from America, and that gives you a couple points in my book. But Ian Poulter, I mean, he's just like Bubba.
I respected Ian Poulter for a while because even though he's European and I root heavily, very heavily, unbelievably heavily against Europe in the Ryder Cup, I respected it. The fact that he was making putts, he's got those kind of cojones down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that. But all of his BS with the Twitter, and he's always trying to put people on blast, get people fired. He has these clearly not self-aware incidents about, you know, rich. He's like rich, and somebody mishandled his Ferrari.
Yeah,
and it's like, fuck you.
He has warehouses full of Ferraris. He's got frosted tips. He's like your typical Euro douchebag. And nothing with Bubba. I would respect Bubba a whole hell of a lot more if he just owned who he actually was. It's the pretending that hey, I'm the good old boy from the South. That's the thing that really rubs me the wrong way. If he's like, I'm an asshole. I drive a General Lee. I'm going to leave the Confederate flag on the top. Then it's going to be fine. But he tries to play up the I'm the good guy.
Anyway. Yeah, embrace the villain is pretty much you're always going to win us over.
For sure. That's the way to go. Okay, so those are my feelings on Bubba and a bonus Ian Poulter. Let's go with Riggs. We'll go back and forth here. Billy Horschel.
Oh, little known fact, Billy Horschel is, to my knowledge, the only person in the world that has me blocked on Twitter.
Oh.
And I've never tweeted at him.
Have you tweeted something about him?
Probably.
Yeah.
But I've never tweeted at him. I honestly think he blocked me preemptively, and my guess is that one of his buddies or something is maybe a stoolie.
Yeah.
And might have tweeted at it or told him or texted him or whatever and been like, hey, the Barstool guy shit on you. And he might have gone through,
I see what you're saying,
found me and been like, I'm blocking that guy before he starts shitting on me on Twitter.
I respect that more than the alternative, which is he is a Twitter name searcher where you go through the tweets about you and block you, which is what happened to me and Dottie Pepper.
I can't believe we discovered that this week, actually. That is shocking.
Yeah, Dottie Pepper just completely blocked me on Twitter with no interaction whatsoever.
I was going to say, you never added her or anything like that. It's She clearly was doing a name search of herself, found you, and blocked you.
Which is reprehensible. I you can't do that.
You can't come back from that.
No. And it's, yeah, what, like, how do you have enough spare time to be like, all right, now it's, first of all, it's psychotic if you're like, I need to look up my own name and see what's going on with me. And then to take it far enough to block people is insane.
I didn't see episode one going into kind of an anti-Dottie Pepper.
I don't think anybody did.
Rant.
I think I tweeted like just a joke about her. I don't have any ill will towards her. It's just she blocked me and that's not cool.
No, for sure. And I agree. So Billy Horschel, it goes back to Chambers Bay U.S. Open when he bitched about the greens nonstop. I can't stand that. My roommate and I were watching that. We may have been drinking, and we may have bet heavily on Spieth. But that was the, since they were so West Coast, We made a very foolish move, and we bet on Spieth at like 11 a.m., just totally forgetting that the coverage is way later.
Yep.
So they didn't even tee off until like 6. So we had like, you know, 10-something plus hours until it was going to be finished. So we had nothing else to do but drink. And so we started drinking, and then Billy Horschel is on the screen, and that was when he was doing his whole
wave. He's doing
wave.
He's like wiggle. You guys can't see us, but we're doing like the zigzag hand motion.
He did like the snake zigzag hand
motion. If you watch the tournament, you know what it is because he's like, it was everywhere.
So it's probably I dislike him exponentially more because I was drunk.
Sure.
But I did not like that. I got really pissed off. Then in the post round, he went up to the little screen thing. He was still bitching about it. So not a huge Billy Horschel fan. Somehow he must have seen me writing or tweeting about him. Has me blocked on Twitter.
I also think do you think he looks like Christian Bale in American Psycho?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think he's got that crazy look going that he kind of looks like that.
And before I liked him, if he would come on and apologize, I would like him.
We'll see if we can get that.
Okay, Trent, next up for you, Zach Johnson.
I handpicked this. We handpicked all these.
That's true.
Zach Johnson, Iowa guy. I'm an Iowa guy. Not only an Iowa guy, but a Cedar Rapids guy. And Sneaky has like one of the – he has like a Golf Hall of Fame resume now. He's got two majors, and they're big ones. Augusta 2007 and then the British Open at St. Andrews. I think there's like two or three other guys who have those like pelts on their wall. I think it's like Nicklaus and Woods.
Yeah, if you got to pick two majors to win – and the venue, those are pretty much, those are got to be your top two. Maybe a U.S. Open at Pebble or something.
No.
But I still think probably St. Andrews is up there. So he's got, yeah.
I don't think anything touches Augusta St. Andrews.
Probably the two most prestigious, you know, titles you can have.
Yeah, so it's home cooking for sure. He's from where I'm from. Would I like him if that wasn't the case? We'll never know. I mean, he seems like a super nice guy, just like me, I hope. So Zach Johnson, big on him.
I got nothing against EJ. So I'm all for you. I think, like you said, he's got two phenomenal wins. He had, you know, he's got some gutsy moments over his career, too. He had that when Tiger was trying to make his charge a couple of years ago, and ZJ hit his second shot in the drink. Oh, it was the Chevron World Challenge in December. ZJ hit it like a terrible 8-iron into the drink on the 72nd hole, took a drop from like 70 yards out, and then hold it for par to force a playoff because Tiger got up and down from a bunker. So he's got stones.
For sure. And he also wears those mittens.
Yep.
Have you seen those? They're like pot holders that he wears around. It's a weird move, but I respect it because he's the only person who does it.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to what the Euros always wear in the Ryder Cup when they come out walking through the tunnel with those huge...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I like ZJ. I can live with that.
Okay. So now we were going to do your second guy, Jason Day.
So I asked for Jason Day because universally loved, I believe, J-Day.
Yes.
Great guy, you know, Aussies. Aussies just have that instant you kind of like them vibe, and they have to kind of lose your kind of appreciation.
Yeah, and he seems like his family's great.
Ellie Day.
Shout out to Ellie.
Phenomenal. Dash Day, unbelievable name.
Yep.
Guy's going to be a great stud. So he's phenomenal. The one thing that I always say about Jason Day is that I need to see his dark side because you hear all these rumors. And he always talks about, you know, when I was a kid, I was in a lot of trouble.
They're like not even rumors. It's just he had a rough childhood.
You're right. It's not rumors. It's like, yes, he had a rough childhood. His caddy, who's also his coach, like saved his life, stepped in as a father figure when Jason Day's father died, I believe, at a young age. So he's got this dark side. Clearly has it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's got the vertigo thing going that comes out every now and then. When you got kind of a vertigo dark side combo, I need to see it come out.
Unfortunately, the thing that'll bring this on is like some sort of tournament collapse, and then it'll be news stories coming out like Ellie Day hasn't talked to Jason in 3 days.
Yeah,
and then it's gonna be like, oh, here we go.
Which I don't necessarily want it to go that route,
right?
But I'm just saying for the record, I need to see Jason Day's dark side because he's too perfect now.
No, I think you're right. Everybody likes him, and you know it's there. It's
in there. I can see it.
Yes, but it's unfortunately, like I said, it's going to take something going not so well for Jason for that side to come out, which I don't want to happen because I'm a big Ellie Day fan.
We'll see what happens. So that was pro feelings.
Yep.
Player feelings.
Pro player feelings, either one.
Pros/players.
We're still working on the segment names.
Pros that are players feelings.
Yeah.
We're going to go through that pretty frequently because the game is driven very heavily, especially when you're watching the coverage, by how you feel about certain players, who you're pulling for coming down the stretch.
Yeah, and we didn't pick these names out of the hat, per se. Actually, we handpicked them. But when somebody's that we haven't talked about is playing well in a tournament or they're making headline news, we'll give our 2 cents about how we feel about them.
Next segment, this one's called From the Gallery. Like we said in the beginning, we want the show to be very communal. We want it to be very relatable to the average golfer, to the common golfer, whether you're out there over the weekend hacking it up with your buddies, having some drinks. We want parts of the show as much as possible to be relatable to you. We want so what we're saying is we want feedback from the listeners.
Yep.
For everybody that's reading any of our golf stuff, email us at foreplay foreplay at barstoolsports.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also foreplaypod on Twitter and Instagram.
Yep.
Send us your story, send us your stuff.
That's the beauty of golf is everyone has their crew that they play with, and every crew across the country has their own rules, has their own little weird things that they do, and we want to hear all about that. We want to share that with the world.
We're going to get into mine at the end of the show,
mm-hmm.
which is the Shotgun Mulligan.
Such a good name.
Very good name. One of my favorite rules in the world of golf. However, first, and on this segment right now, we're going to get into, we actually already had listeners, future listeners, send us a couple of their little nuances, traditions, whatever you want to call them, they have with their buddies. First of all, we got two from Nate from Scottsdale.
Shout out to Nate.
One of them is, when the beer cart girl comes by, last person to 3-putt buys a round. No exceptions.
That's a good one.
I like that a lot.
I do too.
This is definitely a version of Snake. I don't know if you ever played Snake, but it's basically the last person to three putt. Typically, you owe something to the pot, and then at the end of the nine holes, each nine holes, the last person that's three putted is the snake.
Okay.
Produces a lot of good jokes, like, ooh, this putt looks really reptilian.
Oh, the puns.
A lot of fun stuff like that. So it's very snaky, but Nate from Scottsdale, I do like that.
I'm looking forward to people's opinions on, like, beer cart girls. If we're going to get, if people are going to send stuff in.
We, you know,
just kind of how, just, I need to know what the rules are on, like, how people interact.
No,
with
I need pictures of beer cart girls.
Oh!
We need people to just start taking selfies and pictures of beer cart
girls. Beer cart girl of the week is going to be something, I think.
Beer cart girl of the week. Wow. That just happened in real time.
Wow.
/ in a recorded podcast.
Just spitballing.
Yeah, so Beer Cart Girl of the Week is our other segment
that will be implemented in the future.
So start taking pictures really creepily, as creepily as possible of beer cart girls. Nothing violation.
Make them, is consensual the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, we'll count it.
Okay, make it be like, hey, explain it to them. Don't be like creepily taking pictures of girls.
I kind of like the creepily thing. Just, again, make it legal and non like harassment-y.
Great point.
But we're still working out that segment. That's brand new.
It's from 35 seconds
ago.
Yeah,
brand new segment there, Cart Girl of the Week. So the other thing, Nate from Scottsdale, he calls it the hand wedge. I really like this one, actually. He says, and I quote, "If conditions are poor and money isn't on the line, once per hole you are allowed to pick up the ball and toss it by hand. It counts as a stroke, and your feet have to stay planted, both of them. It rarely results in a better shot than if you had just used a club."
Yeah, you're really taking a risk if you do that.
I think you got to be playing really shitty if you go to the hand wedge.
Definitely. Because any golf shot is going to be, well, like, because I'm thinking from the fairway. So, and you can't throw it that far. But if, are we talking like around the greens? Then yes.
I think it's anywhere.
If it's around the greens, I don't trust myself chipping around the greens. I would much rather pick it up and just like throw it towards the hole.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's very dependent on the golfer's skill level and the shot, but yeah, if you're like in some fescue 20 yards from the green or something, you sprayed one way, right?
Right.
You can just flop one out there with your hand. I mean, that's not a bad deal.
No, you definitely, but you wouldn't want to use it like, you wouldn't want to use the hand wedge on your drive. You wouldn't want to use it in the middle of the fairway. But I think around the greens, I love that. Is that how often you get to use it? Does it say?
Once a round. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Once a hole.
No.
Yeah, you got to limit that.
Once a round, I'm using my hand wedge.
I'll be honest, too. I thought that in all of these that I would be familiar with a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I've never been driving around the course and seen someone just, like, throw them on the fucking green. Which would be, I kind of like it. I kind of would respect it if I drove by someone and then I see him just, like, throwing balls.
Just John Elway one, just, like, towards the green.
Those guys know the rules.
This isn't the game you guys think you're playing. Yeah, I don't know. It's got to be one around. It can't, or one every nine holes. It can't be one per hole.
Yeah, so they might be onto something. We got to limit it a little bit. We got Eddie. Eddie has one that's probably people have something pretty similar. He says, if someone in the group gets a hole in one, everyone else in the group, so not the guy that got the hole in one, but everyone else, has to jump immediately into the nearest body of water.
Big fan of that.
And he put in parentheses, no matter what the weather conditions.
And did you say the guy who makes the hole-in-one doesn't do it?
The guy that makes the hole-in-one is good to go.
If you are the guy who makes the hole-in-one and all of your buddies are jumping in the leg of the pond and you don't, you're a goddamn loser.
Yep.
Doesn't stipulate, but you have to have the option that like you can jump in as well.
Yeah, 100%. And it's almost like if you make some bet, like, oh, loser's got to take a shot or something. Yeah. You always take a shot with the people.
Yeah, it's just everybody's having a good time.
Yeah.
Good vibes all around.
So I don't mind that one from Eddie. I think most people have something pretty similar. And then he also put in parentheses, the guy loves parentheses, he put, this has never happened before. So none of his buddies are
going to hold on. That's the thing. You can't be like, if somebody makes an eagle putt or a birdie putt, we all jump in the pond. It's got to be a big deal because you're just soaked.
Yeah, and it's wild because the hole-in-one thing, I mean, no one ever gets a fucking hole-in-one. So you could almost make it like, yeah, we'll just all kill ourselves or something.
Do you have a hole-in-one?
No. I've actually never even really come close.
Is that true?
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
surprising.
I've had like maybe two or three out of all of my fucking swings. I've played a lot of golf. Yeah. That were legitimately like could have gone in, were close. And other than that, maybe I'm just a conservative player. I don't know, on par threes. But I'm fucking never scaring the hole on
that's
par
crazy.
Three.
But I will say this. I don't have one either. Everybody's shocked. But
well, it is a little stunning because it's always like the guy in the group that sucks.
That was my next point. Yeah. The guy in my friend group who has one. He's a shitty golfer.
Yeah, it's always like, oh, I sculled one and it like rolled off a fucking
rake. It did. It like rolled all the way there.
Yeah, right.
So yeah.
It does kind of surprise me that you don't have one.
Yeah, I definitely don't.
Next segment, headlines. Should be self-explanatory.
Yep.
Golf headlines. Trent, we got Tiger. First of all, he played last weekend. I don't think we need to beat that into the ground. But then, on his way to Dubai, he's playing in the Omega Desert thing, whatever, in Dubai.
Yeah.
He got, I believe, held up and almost missed his flight at LAX. Is that correct?
That's what I heard. And just to jump back a little bit to Torrey Pines, our expectations were make the cut, hopefully. So he did not meet those expectations.
No, he didn't. But also our alternate facts expectations were don't grab your back and wince and withdraw from the tournament.
Yep.
And he didn't do that. So also a success.
That's pretty much the bar now until he makes a cut.
Yeah.
The bar is make a cut / don't, you know, break your back.
I think, too, he made it very clear when they asked him during his presser last week, you know, hey, at what point do you start thinking about Augusta? And he said, right now.
He also made another comment, which is in that same vein, where they were asking him after he missed the cut, how do you view this week? Or, you know, because up until this point, or, you know, old Tiger would say, I'm always here to win the tournament. That's why I'm here. Last week, he said after missing the cut at Torrey Pines that I'm just trying to get ready for that first week in April. So that's a shift in tone from our boy.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that even though he's never going to say it, like he's not coming to these tournaments necessarily expecting to win, just wants to be healthy. Anyway, on his way to Dubai.
Went to LAX and got held up, almost missed his flight because of some of the anti-immigration ban, you know, protesters were there. And he also said after Torrey Pines that he was worried about the flight going there because apparently it's a 17-hour flight, and which was a confusing comment to me. You take a private jet, it's no big deal. You're living in luxury. I saw today that he with that flight he was late for, he was flying commercial for the first time in 10 years. So he flew commercial all the way there, and that's why he was worried about it, because you're not living in luxury 17 hours on a commercial flight.
Yeah, I don't really know how someone that owns his own private jet and his own yachts and all that shit is, you know, kind of grinding through protesters at LAX.
Just like bodying protesters?
For like a 17-hour flight to Dubai.
The way that I understand it is that's the only flight that could go direct to Dubai. Okay. I don't know what goes beyond, like, with planning your private jet. Maybe it wasn't available. Maybe it's trying to get fixed. But he had a 17-hour flight, almost missed it because of Trump protesters at LAX. Kind of wild.
So I've been to Dubai.
Really?
Yep. And I want to say, first of all, the flight is very long. I went, it's a good story. I went, this is 3-4 years ago now? 3.5, 4 years ago, something like that. I got laid off my job. It was like a small startup. Fired like half the company, which was like 8 people or something. And at the same time, I met this chick. I started dating this chick. She worked for IBM.
Nice.
Hashtag nice. Congrats to me on the sex. And so, start dating this chick. And IBM has a policy where, you know, they do consulting model. So they're always like doing different jobs, projects where they, you know, fly out Sunday night, fly back Thursday, whatever. But if you're a certain amount of distance away, like in fucking Dubai, this chick was actually in Abu Dhabi, little known fact, that's only about an hour drive, maybe 45 minutes
okay.
from Dubai. So she's working in Abu Dhabi, and they didn't fly her home every weekend because that's ridiculous. But they do make a deal where you can fly a significant other out on IBM's dime
okay.
to visit you. So it's only like 2 or 3 weeks into this little relationship thing. She hits me with like, hey, you're not really working right now. Do you want to come out to Abu Dhabi in Dubai and visit me? And I was like,
Hard to say no to that, I would imagine.
Hard to say no, but I was a very naive Midwestern guy at the time. And I was like, isn't that in the Middle East? And she was like, no, it's super safe. I was like, yeah, sure it is.
Okay.
So I did some research. Turns out it's very safe. And they also kind of have the same laws as like Singapore, where if you like key a car, they like, cut your arm off. Or something like that. So, like, wow.
So
no crime.
People aren't messing
around.
People
are not fucking around okay. in the UAE. So, anyways, I get all my shit together. I'm going over there for, like, a week. Get my shit together. Trying to look as un-American as possible.
Okay.
Because I'm in the, you know, I'm on the Persian fucking, swimming in the Persian Gulf and shit. Packed my bag. Got all my shit. Went shopping. Made sure I looked un-American, European, is whatever I wanted to look like. Get on. It's a 15-and-a-half-hour flight.
Mm-hmm.
So I get on the plane. I'm like the only person not wearing a headscarf and all that on the plane. I'm like, oh, God, this is way outside my comfort zone. Turns out they serve a bunch of alcohol on the flight.
Love it.
And it's free because, you know, it was Emirates Air or something like that, I believe, which is like the top airline in the world. So anyways, get there. They don't have my bag. So I legit land in the UAE, no bag, had to go. They don't have like strip malls and shit where you can just go shop. They have like destination malls.
Oh,
where
the fuck
like
is
you
that?
Have to go to like this whole like 4-story mall is the only place you can shop.
I was gonna say the thing about Dubai is there's just like huge skyscrapers everywhere, right?
Yeah. So this was Abu Dhabi, okay. Which is again is near. We went to Dubai for half the trip, but started in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
So anyway, so we get there, no bag, have to go shopping in the Middle East. It's a long flight, so I can see where Tiger's coming from and not want to have to do it two times. But very nice place.
Yeah?
Yeah, Dubai is wild. It's like, it'd be like if you took New York City and like put it on the beach.
Ooh, I kind of like that.
In terms of, yeah, like super modern architecture and all that. So so it's wild. It's
How
a wild
long were
place.
You there?
I was there 5 days.
Okay.
It's a good 15-and-a-half-hour flight there, like 13 hours back.
Did you play any golf while you were over there?
So we went to the race to Dubai. The final tourney was that weekend. This mm-hmm. was in November.
Okay.
And we went and get this ticket. If you just like gave EuropeanTour.com your email address, mm-hmm. they just give you free tickets. To
wow.
That tournament. So we went to the tournament in Dubai. We saw Rory. We saw Luke Donald. Okay. Saw all kinds of people. So it was very nice, but it's a long flight. I feel bad for Tiger.
Riggsy just getting flown out on a fling.
I flew out for free on a fling, a free fling.
That's pretty great.
It was awesome. It was a really cool time. So I've been to no big deal, very cultured.
Yeah, you are. Even though you just basically said like I feel I don't fit in here. I don't like it here. At least on the plane.
You should have seen how out of place I was.
I could imagine.
I'm like walking around in jeans and like sneakers being like, "Oh my god, they're going to kidnap me the whole time." Like I'm ducking in the car like yeah. we go to gas stations and stuff like that. But turns out, you know, they're actually, you know, like the whole like travel. What am I thinking of the travel industry? What the hell is that called? Tourism.
That was so vague. I didn't know.
Yeah, you should have heard what was going on in my head.
So
tourism's like their biggest thing.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
So yeah, Tiger's playing there this week, and the tee times were weird.
A little bit obviously. Of a tangent there.
That's okay.
Tiger's tees off at like 11:15 tomorrow night,
which is kind of sucks because I don't. I mean,
if it was like 9, that'd be fine. But 11:15, mm-hmm. I mean, what, you're gonna watch him play till 4 a.m.
No, I'm not going to do that. Not on a work week. I mean, I love golf. I'm doing this podcast for that reason, but that's kind of tough.
So Tiger's got a weird week coming up. He's playing 3 of the next 4.
Yep.
We'll get into a lot more Tiger talk when he starts not sucking at golf, really.
Well, yeah, and when we have more to talk about. Torrey, you could not have a more, like, down the middle, not good, not bad debut at Torrey Pines.
Yeah, very, very kind of whatever.
Me too. Which is not how I want to feel about Tiger, but it just so happens that's the point that he's at right now.
As long as he's not hurt, we're good. Speaking of Torrey, Ollie Snyderjans finished T9. He went 69, 69, 71, 71. We talked with him, our first interview ever.
Yep.
Everyone, please enjoy this interview with Ollie Snyderjans. Okay, now we are officially joined by our first guest. Ollie Snyderjans?
Is it Snyderjans or Snyderjans?
Pretty good, yeah. It's just Snyderjans.
Okay. We were going real back and forth with that at the beginning. So first question, we're going to start off right out of the gate.
First of all, welcome. First guest of our podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be the first one. That's cool.
Yeah, you're the guinea pig, so this could go a number of different ways. Okay, so first question, really easy. Where are you at right now? Where are you talking to us from?
I flew in last night to Waste Management, so I'm here in Phoenix.
So what's the setup like? I mean, are you with some family? Are you by yourself? You got a house? You got a hotel? What's the setup?
I'm staying in a hotel at the Marriott about a mile from the course. I've got my own room there, and my mom's here, girlfriend's coming later, caddy, and trainer's here. And my dad's also coming this week.
You got the whole crew.
Got a fun crew. This should be a really amped event. I just was out there playing today, and you can tell they're prepared for hundreds of thousands of fans on that 16th hole. It's going to be pretty epic.
So is that usually the crew that you roll with, or is this a special occasion because it's the Waste Management?
Well, my mom comes to a lot of events. She's also my manager, business manager. And then my dad has been able to come. He came last week and he's coming this week. So that's really neat when he can make it out. He doesn't get the chance to do that too much. And then my caddy's obviously with me every week. And then my trainer comes about half the week. And so yeah, it's a pretty normal crew. But
yeah, one of the reasons I think that Yeah. One of the reasons I think we really wanted to have you on is because you're kind of one of the younger up-and-coming guys. You're not necessarily at the point where, you know, you got Tiger Rory taking a private jet in between events and things like mm-hmm. that. And as kind of a podcast for, you know, we kind of bill ourselves as for the common golfer, by the common golfer types, we think it's really interesting to see, you know, how you roll from event to event, who you roll with, kind of like what's the scene like,
sure.
let's say, you know, Monday until Thursday at the house or at the Marriott or wherever.
Yeah, depending on if I'm at a hotel or a house. Last week I stayed at a house with Patrick Rogers, who's one of my best buddies out there, and his caddy, so me and my caddy and Patrick and his caddy at a house about 15 minutes from the course. That was really fun. And really roll in on Sunday night or Monday, and you maybe get out to the course and see nine holes and just kind of get registered and get acclimated to your surroundings. And then Tuesday is, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is pretty relaxing after intense four rounds of golf. So we get some practice in, we get, you know, accustomed to the new course and get prepared, get what we need to get done in the gym, and then have some fun dinners and relax and get ready for Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a little unique for you because a lot of these courses, almost most of the events you're going to be playing are new stops for you. You haven't seen them before.
Yeah, I fortunately was able to play a good amount before on sponsor invites. So even as a rookie, I've been lucky to return to a few courses that I've seen once before. But this is a new one this week, and I'm pretty excited for this one. I've been looking forward to it for a while.
Kind of throwing you right into the lion's den with the waste management right out of the gate. I mean, I feel like the crowds there are going to be wild even for the practice rounds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, today was Monday, and I was out there at noon, and we were just playing the Pro-Am. And, I mean, there was probably only 200 people on 16, and I think there's going to be, I don't know, tons of thousands around. It's like a Roman Coliseum on steroids. It looks absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
Three stories grandstand surrounding an entire 200-yard hole. So well, I guess it plays like 160, but yeah, it's unbelievable.
So you're playing this event for the first time. Do you have any, because it's different than every other event on tour, do you have any sort of expectations going into it, what the gallery is going to be like, how you're going to feel when you're on that 16th hole? Do you have any sort of inkling on how you're going to feel about it?
Well, I've heard so much from guys just how it just blows your mind, and it's everything you expect times five. So I'm kind of going in prepared that it's going to blow me away with the intensity and the electricity and that little Coliseum there. And seeing it today, it was mind blowing. I mean, there was probably 50 people. I don't know what I said earlier, 50-100 people there today in there. And you could hear their voices from 150 yards away. It's almost like everything echoes out there in the desert. So it's going to be absurdly loud, and people have no filters. It's going to be pretty nuts out there. It's going to be probably as nuts as any other sporting event.
Yeah, it's funny.
At least.
Because as the Barstool guys, that's the one thing that we get the most comments about is you guys have to go to the waste management. You guys were born for this
mm-hmm.
place. You got to imagine with a bunch of clowns like us in the crowd, that place is going to be wild.
I love this. Yeah.
And it's crazy.
It's a bunch of people from ASU, a bunch of college kids, people, you know, in their 20s and 30s, and just going ballistic for as long as they can in the desert heat with plenty of alcohol.
Yeah, Trent and I were talking beforehand how big of a difference that is, because a year ago, I mean, you're a young guy, you're 23 now, is that right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, a year ago, you're on the web.com tour, and you did have some exemption status or some sponsors exemptions for different events, but a year ago, you're pretty much grinding it out week to week, web.com. What's the biggest difference? I mean, how big of a grind is that? Because a lot of times we hear, you know, unless you're on the PGA Tour, unless you're mm-hmm. playing for the biggest purses, it's really an intense grind, even just to survive week to week.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the web, I would, you know, maybe compare it to minor league baseball. It's sort of,
okay.
It's definitely a major grind. And going week to week to places that aren't necessarily catered to you perfectly. On the PGA Tour, obviously, it's it's incredibly nice, and you get your courtesy cars and amazing food all the time, and there's not a whole lot to complain about.
Sounds nice.
But on the web.com, it's certainly, they do a great job, and they do take care of the guys well. I would imagine on the mini tours below that, that would be the level of grind that maybe you're thinking of. But the web.com does a good job taking care of us, and we felt like big tournaments every week to week, and you're trying to get, you have a great chance to earn your PGA Tour card if you have a good year. So it's a grind, but that's the place you want to be. You want to be on the web.com to get to the next level. It's sort of like AAA baseball, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I think that for us, just kind of watching, we love the up and coming kind of new phase of golfers. You're obviously a big part of that. One thing we have to talk about is the fact that you don't rock a hat out there and you go full locks on display. You're one of, I mean, the last guy I can really think of was of Robert Rock, who was a British guy, who came out and was hatless and all that. Where's that come from? What's the background there?
Well, the background is I never liked wearing a hat. And when I played baseball when I was younger, I used to wear the bill super up. So it's sort of like pointed up because I couldn't stand seeing the bill when I was playing, you know, fielding grounders or doing anything, hitting. I always had the bill straight up in the air, and I hated wearing a hat because of that. And as soon as I quit baseball when I was 12, I was like, I'm never wearing a hat when I play sports.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine you took some shit for the bill up look.
Oh, yeah. I got plenty of heat for that. And then when I didn't wear a hat, I get lots of positives and lots of negative feedback on not wearing a hat, but I feel like it's got to be mostly
positive. You got a great head of hair on you.
Yeah, I would say 95% positive.
Yeah, I mean, if you got it, you got to flaunt it. I feel like
I feel like when I do wear a hat, I can't stand seeing the bill. I think it's something I could get used to if I had to, and I do wear hats off the golf course all the time, no problem. So it's just sort of my thing.
Do companies approach you, be like, let us put a hat on you, just like, let us put a hat on you? Do they approach you, or are they like, he's doing the hair thing, he's not going to listen to us?
Well, Callaway's been super supportive of me and of my choice to not wear a hat, and that's been pretty amazing because of, you know, the hat is probably the top spot for sponsors to have. So they've been supportive of me not wearing a hat and doing my thing. And that's been really nice. But of course, people would love to have spot on the hat, of course.
Yeah, I mean, if what was it, 5-Hour Energy that convinced Jim Furyk to wear that ridiculous hat for a long time. So I feel like you're really holding out. You're doing a good job.
Well, I am. If I were to wear a hat currently with Callaway, it would be a Callaway hat.
All right. Well, you might not know it yet, but at some point we're going to talk you into wearing a Barstool hat.
All right, we'll see.
Preferably up when you walk up 16 at the Waste Management.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Back to Waste Management. Do you have a plan for 16? Because a lot of guys have choreographed dances or anything like that. Do you have something planned on 16?
It's funny you guys mentioned that because I was just thinking about it before you guys called in. I was thinking about, you know, that would be the thing I would do on 16 was I'd put a hat on for 16. And if I did, I have to talk to Callaway about this, but I'd love to put a Pat's hat on.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's actually a pretty good call.
You guys would like that too. So I'd put a Pat's hat on for the 16th hole and then maybe have a few extras and throw them out in the stands.
So we were gonna ask you about that because you originally from Dallas, eventually moved to Georgia and went to Georgia Tech, but you lived in Boston for a brief period, right?
I lived in Boston very briefly, only for first grade, but both of my parents were from North Andover, but both my parents on both sides are from Boston. They both my parents went to Merrimack College, so it's very much in our family. It's kind of what keeps our family always in touch all the time is Boston sports. Ever since Drew Bledsoe days with the Patriots, so and the Bruins and Celtics, and it's been kind of a huge part of our family since I could since I can remember. So Boston sports is very near and dear to my family on both sides.
Yeah, I have to imagine.
And my two brothers as well.
I have to imagine you'd get a good combination of cheers and boos if you rock the Pats hat on Saturday or on Sunday.
I have a feeling it'd be a lot of boos, but I'm okay with that.
I think if we potentially send you a Barstool hat, you get a lot more cheers than boos.
Yeah, you're right, probably.
Okay, so we got to talk about Torrey Pines. You had an awesome week. Obviously, you're close with Patrick Rodgers. Also had an awesome week. You know, what's that like? A lot of people consider Torrey kind of the first big one of the year. There's obviously all the big names with Tiger and DJ and those guys. And all of a sudden, you know, you come in Saturday, you're tied for the lead at one point on Saturday, and like I said, you're a 23-year-old guy looking to make your way on the PGA Tour. What's going through your mind? Are you nervous out there? Are you feeling pretty confident?
Well, the weekends out there are just so intense, and the emotions are going, the frustration going on when things aren't going your way. It's just a battle, but it's so much fun, incredible atmosphere out there, and an amazing venue at Torrey Pines. To be playing at that place with good weather on the weekend and contention on the PGA Tour is just, I mean, that's what you dream about doing. So it was a really, really fun opportunity to try and win my first tournament, and I'm itching real hard to try to get that first W and just keep getting in position on Sundays, because there's nothing like it. And it was a blast, and have my friend Patrick right up there too. We were both trying so hard to get up there and split from the pack on that Sunday. But tough golf course, tough greens, and a lot of guys playing well. It was a good week, and I can build off of that going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, Trent and I were at the office watching, and it was, I believe, 17 guys teed off within three shots of the lead, and we were, I had, you know, I might be a little bit of a gambler, and I had wagered some money on you to win, so we were, like, trying to follow, and every time they show the leaderboard, it's like, oh, there he is, and they show it again, and be like, if you're two shots back, you, like, weren't in the top eight. It was wild. It was wild to follow.
Yeah, that's not too normal. I mean, it happens here and there, but for it to be that jam-packed was pretty exciting, I think, for people to watch, knowing there's probably a dozen guys with a chance to win still on the back nine. It was on a pretty epic golf course. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were, speaking of kind of, you know, having a bunch of guys in contention, we got to talk about the class of 2011, the high school class. Everybody always hypes it up with, you know, you got JT, you got Spieth, yeah, you're coming onto the scene. You know, what's that like with so many guys around the same age coming up and kind of, there's all these different narratives of it's, first it's, you know, it's Rory taking over, and then it's the big three, and then now it's class of 2011. I mean, how does it feel to be a part of that? How real are those narratives? You know, does that play a factor at all when you're out there on tour trying to figure out where you stand?
I feel like our class is just at every level, sort of the five, six, seven, or I mean, it's become like six or seven of us from that class. We just all played Junior Ryder Cups together. We played AJGAs in college, and we all had such individual paths, even though we were all from the same class. Justin turned pro at a different time than Jordan, and Patrick turned different pro at a different time than me. We all turned pro at different times. Berger kind of came on hot later after, you know, his sophomore year, and then turned pro right after a hot year. So we've all sort of had our different paths, and none of us played on the same college team, which I think was actually a good thing for all of us to sort of have our own teams there and do have our own paths. But yeah, it's been incredible what Jordan has done, especially he kind of got it all going and then won two majors last year. It's just unbelievable. And now Justin, no surprise, is doing huge things. And Patrick and I hoping to keep it going for the class of 2011. But I think we've just all had to rise to the level of play at every stage, from junior golf to college, and now on the PGA Tour, trying to adapt to the level of competition. And we want to win tournaments even right away on the PGA Tour. We know how to win, and we want to win, and we know we can. Watching Jordan do what he's done and Justin do what he's done, it definitely gets us itching.
I'm gonna make you go at one of your guys here, the 2011 class. Who do you think? So we were talking about your hair earlier. You got a great head of hair on you. Who do you? So you probably got the best head of hair in that group. Who do you think's got the worst head of hair in that group? Feel free to call out one of your friends.
It's obviously between Jordan and Justin. Both have detrimental receding hairlines at this point.
Not progressing hairlines.
No. And I think they both admit, I don't know. It's definitely between them two. I don't want to call one of them out in particular, but they're definitely going to keep the hat on.
I'll finish it for you. It's Spieth. And now we, that's probably going to be like, we're going to headline this and blog it. And it's going to be, Ollie calls out Jordan for a receding headline.
Yeah, we can be as mean as we want about this, pretty much. So we'll have to have a behind the scenes talk and be like, all right, how ruthless do we want to be with the hair comment?
That's great.
He like doesn't want to say anything else. I think he's.
I'm done.
No, I'll be honest. I was impressed. He kind of went right in. He was like, oh, I know the two to talk about. That's not a problem. I do feel like those guys, they embrace it, which I respect. It also makes them very relatable. Trent and I, you know, we're kind of in the same boat.
It's true.
All right, so we're going to close with, we do a little segment with all of our guests, especially our first guest, and it's called Rapid Fire. It's very easy. We got a handful of questions. We're just going to ask them really quickly. You answer them really quickly, and we move right on.
All right,
first question, easy one. Burrito or burrito bowl?
Burrito.
What kind of shampoo do you use?
It's different everywhere.
It's different?
Hotel shampoo.
No way.
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's going to shock a lot of people because you're telling us that you, when you go out on the golf course, it's hotel shampoo.
Oh, it could have been a different shampoo for each round.
I thought you were going to come in with some concoction I'd never heard of.
No, not quite.
How many times are you running a comb through that hair?
I don't even use a comb sometimes.
I think he's got to be full of shit at some point. Okay, next question. If you were not a pro golfer, what would you be doing?
Pro tennis player.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Well, racket sports. Okay.
Okay, if you had one crazy night out, you were just going full bore, you want to go out, you want to have a few drinks with the boys, who is the one guy on tour that you would take out with you or have you take you out?
Oh man. Jeez. I don't know where to go with this one. I guess I'd go with Patrick because he's probably one of my best friends. We'd find a way to have a good time.
Okay. That sounds like a safe answer. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. How do you feel about the immigration ban? We're just fucking with you.
Just kidding. Don't answer that. Don't answer that.
I'm not commenting.
We actually, if you were going to say something ruthless, we were just going to cut it or hold it over your head.
That would have been great, though, if you had just gone in. Whichever direction would have been fantastic.
Oh, that was great.
All right, man. Hey, we were pulling for you this last weekend. We were pumped to see you up there. We were actually fist pumping your putts, believe it or not.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're gonna be pulling for you again this weekend. We really appreciate you joining us, and good luck out there.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Ollie. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Take care.
Take care. All right. That was Ollie Snyder-Jans, our first interview. Trent, what'd you think?
I thought he was good. He came up a little short this week, but, you know, we'll be rooting for him the rest of the way.
He was awesome to watch this last weekend. Just because there were so many guys in the mix.
Yep.
When there's that many guys in the mix and there's no one that really sticks out that you're going nuts for, you do kind of want to root for one of the guys like him. That's kind of a young guy.
Yep.
A win would get him all kinds of status and all kinds of into the Masters and things like that that he's not into. So it was really cool that we were able to get him. Huge thanks to him for taking time out.
Absolutely.
He had just gotten to the Phoenix and all that. So
very cool of him to come on.
So yeah, we'll be pulling for him. Speaking of Torrey, pretty electric fucking finish.
Yeah, it was weird because we watched it all day together, and the leaderboard is pack, pack, pack. Bunch of names, you know, Keegan Bradley's up there, Ollie's up there, all these guys, and then John Rahm, kind of out of nowhere.
kind of out of nowhere, and he, I mean, it was wild, too, because it was, oh, five guys are tied for the lead, and oh, my God, there's 20 guys within three shots, and then all of a sudden it was...
Oh, he made two eagles on the back nine, and he wins.
And it's over.
It's over.
It was like...
It was instantly over.
It was weird. The last hour, it was just over.
Yeah.
And no one was getting it.
We're just like, all right, let these guys finish up.
Even close. I had written in the my little Sunday morning blog, you know, a handful of names, and it was like, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be too excited if these guys win. One of them was Rahm. But the way that he won made it wild.
That eagle putt, they'll be showing that highlight for years to come whenever the Farmers Open runs around or comes around.
I mean, those are incredible. One of the guys in the office, too, was saying how it's almost cooler when a putt like that goes in rather than a chip.
Yeah.
Because
it's more visual. When you chip it in from wherever, you're not up close with it. You maybe don't see it go in. With a putt like that, double breaker, and then just drops on the side of the cup.
You're following that damn thing roll the whole time like a robot, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's got a chance. And it wiggled right.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, and then it like wiggled back left. Like, oh, all right, here we go.
Place went wild, 18, I mean, on a Sunday.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of stuff from readers, listeners, too, all week about, like, this guy is a total beauty. He's a legend. 22-year-old Spaniard.
Arizona State guy,
put again in the blog, must have been real rough for him with a little Spanish accent.
Yeah.
6'2", future pro athlete at Arizona fucking State.
I saw that Tim Mickelson wasn't only, he was obviously his coach at Arizona State, but he's his manager now, or his agent, which I didn't know that was a thing.
So he's got some serious connections. This will not be the last time he wins.
No, he's going to be a star.
And that's guys like us, too, who we were kind of like, yeah, he's definitely one of the guys that we know the least about. And then a lot of the golf hardos that kind of know all the college scene and all that. We're like, no, this guy's been X, Y, and Z. So clearly a phenomenal talent.
Yep.
Like everything I've heard about this dude. So it was wild to see. We got the Waste Management this weekend. Mm-hmm. We just heard a little bit about it from Ollie.
Ollie's pumped.
Ollie is
I'm pumped for him.
Up. Me
this
too.
Is his first time. So you understand why he's excited.
It was really cool talking to a guy who's genuinely like, no, I've been wanting to play in this tournament my whole life. I'm here. My whole family's here. I'm at the Marriott. I'm ready to rock.
He got me excited about it, and I'm excited about it always because it's basically the Stoolie Open because there's so many Stoolies that go there, and they're just 16 is their home base. They're gonna shower Ollie with a bunch of love now.
I really like that. The Waste Management Stoolie Open.
Stoolie Open, you like that?
Oh, I cannot wait to cover the Stoolie Open this weekend.
Hashtag Stoolie Open if you're there. Hey, if you're going to be at the Waste Management this weekend, you're a Stoolie. Pictures, videos, crazy stuff. You yelling Viva La Stoolie at people. Hashtag Stoolie Open.
I love that. Hashtag Stoolie Open. Or if you're out playing golf and you want to take a creepy picture of a cart girl. Hashtag cart girl of the week.
Yep.
Or hashtag Stoolie Open if you are at the Stoolie Open in Phoenix. And send us stuff. I think we're going to get some great footage.
The past couple of years before we had a golf podcast, I got a bunch of great stuff from Stoolies, and we didn't have put the word out. So yeah, if you're there, hashtag Stoolie Open, send us a bunch of shit.
So this is a podcast it's a communal, it's for the people. I've been teasing the Shotgun Mulligan for a couple weeks now. It is probably the most game changing rule tradition to add to your group. The story is. It's been about 4 or 5 years now. A bunch of my buddies and I joined, like I've mentioned a couple times, junior membership at a semi-private club outside of Boston. We were all single guys. We would go up on Saturdays and Sundays and just play golf the whole goddamn day. I mean, one of those where you get up there around 8 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Sun doesn't go down until 9. You could pretty much play till like 9:15, 9:30. And we knew we're going to play at least 36 holes of golf, maybe more. We're going to drink the whole time. I got my one buddy who's an absolute legend, total clown. He's actually capable of playing some good golf, but also capable of playing some horrific golf. And he's one of those guys when he hits a bad shot, he's like, hey, I can just like hit another one, right? We're like, no, like we always play for money. Like that's illegal. So you just blatantly can't do that. And eventually we caved and we were like, all right, we'll make a deal with you. Mike, his name's Mike, great guy. Shout out, Mike. We're like, all right, if you take a shot, you have 60 seconds after you hit a shitty shot.
Okay, so it's from the time that you hit it and you're like, oh, I got one hit, you got 60 seconds.
So you hit a shot. And you can, if you'd like, declare a shotgun mulligan. Okay. You have 60 seconds from that moment to shotgun a beer, which then makes you eligible to hit another shot.
Mm.
If you do that in under 60 seconds, your second shot is now the ball in play. Your first one is forfeited, and you're back in.
Okay, so you have 60 seconds to shotgun the beer, tee it up again and hit it.
Exactly. But you can take it from anywhere outside of 50 yards into the green. So you could be 100 yards out with a wedge, shank it, scull it,
okay,
it, whatever the hell you want. Declare shotgun mulligan, run to the cart, grab a beer, shotgun it, hit another shot. Your ball's back in play. It can be the second ball. It cannot be the first shot.
Okay.
Very strategic. You got to be really strategic with it because you might be like, hey, we're one down on the front nine. I can't let us get three or four down, so you keep doing shotgun mulligans, but then you're blackout drunk for the back nine.
Okay, so you can use it as many times as you want, but you're going to be shit hammered.
Similar to what the guy said earlier about throwing the ball, this is very much about regulation. Mm-hmm. So it's become, you know, when we do play, we don't play this very often. It's only those types of days when it's like, this is as much about drinking and just getting away from girls or girlfriends, wives, whatever the hell it is. We're just out golfing with the boys, and we know we're going to drink a shit ton, so why not just make shotgun mulligans a part of it?
Okay.
Makes it more fun. Again, it's not for every occasion, but the times that you do play it, it's probably more beneficial, and we should probably say for a disclaimer to regulate it a little bit.
Oh, but you're probably right.
But I've played many times where it's unregulated, and you can just do unlimited shotgun mulligans.
I like that.
And, you know, you need to be ready to Uber home, all that type of stuff. Because shit can get sloppy.
I think I love it. I want to say that. 85% of why I love it is the name is fantastic.
The name is really catchy.
Like, Shotgun Mulligan.
Yeah, and so we'll either get to the point where, like, when we're on the first tee, we're talking about, you know, okay, what kind of game are we going to play? Are we going to play, you know, Nassau? What are the teams? We're declaring all that stuff, and we're like, Shotgun Mulligans? Are they... My buddy Mike, he always like shotgun mulligans.
Mike
right?
needs them. Mike needs those. He needs those SMs.
SMs are in. Like, we're doing it. We're doing it. So anyway, anybody out there, that's the biggest thing for my group of buddies. The shotgun mulligan. It's become a big part. There's even a 24-man Ryder Cup thing that we do. A bunch of my buddies from college where we go, and shotgun mulligans are a part of the trip.
Awesome.
So implement that if you'd like. If you got anything similar between you and your buddies, or if there's any females listening, you and your girlfriends. Whatever you do that kind of makes your group unique, different, interesting, funny, whatever the hell it is, email it, foreplay@barstoolsports.com. Tweet it at us, foreplaypod, also at foreplaypod on Instagram. Hit us with your stuff. Very communal show. Trent, what do you got to close it?
I think that's it. I think we can only go down from shotgun mulligans, so I think we should just wrap it up.
Love the shotgun mulligans. Hashtag stoolie open. Hashtag cart girl of the week. Send us your stuff. Hit it hard.
Hit it hard.
I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it.
You still there, Ollie?
Hey.
Hey. Thanks for coming on,
man. You're still there. All right. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Bye.